We're talking to a cardiologist about a surprising phenomenon known as the obesity paradox. He says the science of obesity shows heavier people may actually be healthier than thinner people.
Our guest is Dr. Carl Levee, a cardiologist at the John Ochsner Heart and Vascular Institute in New Orleans, and he is the author of the book we'll be discussing, The Obesity Paradox, When Thinner Means Sicker and Heavier Means Healthier. Dr. Levee, welcome to the program.
It's great to be with you this afternoon.
I want to talk a little bit about how we look at body types in society today. And you talk a little bit about some of that history in your book, particularly with regards to being heavier, being obese. But as we sit here today in 2014, I think it's fair to say the general wisdom is that if you're obese, and pretty much at any level in some cases, that you're unhealthy. And if you're thin, magically somehow that makes you healthy.
I think that's been a perception that's not totally accurate. And my colleagues and I during the past 10 to 15 years, I think, have been involved with a lot of groundbreaking research that in a way is quite controversial, was initially surprising to me as a doctor, and in some ways has really changed conventional wisdom or turned it on its head. I think our research really makes the point that you cannot no longer say what many doctors and what many people have thought for a long time, that thinner is necessarily healthier.
And I want to talk about kind of how you developed your interest in it, because you talk at one point early in the book, and you've got a chapter devoted to it, but the big fat conundrum. And you said that you noticed that there were people who were overweight or moderately obese, and they had a form of cardiovascular disease. And yet, if they had that cardiovascular disease, their prognosis for where they were going to wind up often turned out to be better than some of their thinner counterparts. When did you first start to notice that? And when you started to notice it, it must have raised eyebrows.
Yes, in fact, when I first started to notice it in the early 2000s, and we were doing a study of measuring what's called a cardiopulmonary stress test, measuring oxygen consumption for patients with advanced heart failure, very weakened heart muscle, and we thought that if we corrected the oxygen consumption for lean body mass, we would get a more accurate prediction of prognosis, and we turned out we were correct. But in the process of being able to get the lean body mass, we had to get percent body fat. And when we did that study, we initially saw that the heart failure patients who died had a lower BMI, which is the standard way you define obesity, just a height weight measurement, but they also had a lower percent body fat. And when I first saw those results, my first thought was that we had mixed up the numbers. You know, that we had reversed the deaths and the survivors, and we had it backwards. And we were able to quickly verify that. And then we went over the data very carefully to see is there some mistake here. And we actually found in subsequent papers that were initially hard to get published in the major cardiovascular literature, that we found that in these heart failure patients, for every 1% increase in body fat, there was a 13% reduction in mortality. So we found that the heavier people with advanced heart failure were surviving more. And that was a quite remarkable finding, because we knew that people with very significant obesity developed heart failure more commonly than thinner people. And in fact, you know, we know that at least significant overweightness and obesity adversely affects most of our cardiovascular risk factors. It raises the blood pressure. It raises blood sugars. It adversely affects the blood lipids, the fats in the blood. It increases inflammation. And so people who are heavier get more heart disease. They get more hypertension. They get more coronary artery disease, heart failure, more rhythm disturbances like atrial fibrillation. But now, winding forward from our initial findings in the early 2000s to 2014, numerous studies and large meta-analyses, which means putting together the results of many studies into one large report, have shown that the overweight and obese with these heart diseases, you know, hypertension, coronary disease, heart failure, atrial fibrillation, to name four, that the overweight and obese are actually doing better and sometimes have 30 to 50% lower mortality rates than do the same than the, do the patients with the same heart diseases who are in the normal weight range. So that's really the obesity paradox, at least in cardiovascular disease, in a nutshell.
And it raises all sorts of questions, but I think one of the biggest questions it sort of raises, at least in my mind, is this whole idea of what good health looks like. Because, you know, I think that, as you said earlier, there's that perception you can look at somebody and sort of tell. But the numbers aren't telling that story. At the same time, we hear all the stories about, you know, the obesity epidemic, and Americans are sitting on the couch watching television and all that sort of thing. And there are a lot of mixed messages out there. How do you sort all of that stuff out?
Yeah, and absolutely. And I'd like to say from the outset for the folks listening that my book, The Obesity Paradox, does not try to promote obesity. And I'm never suggesting that people who are normal weight try to gain weight to become overweight or obese. But my book points out a number of fallacies that I think people have developed over many decades of thinking that fat is the devil. I mean, fat has been demonized by our society, and that's not always the case. In fact, our research shows that low fitness is a much bigger threat to health that usually comes from low physical activity than is fatness if one's main goal is to live a long and healthy life. And I like to just talk about a big study that came out in January of 2013. It's by Catherine Flegel of the Center of Disease Control. It was published in JAMA, which is, along with New England Journal of Medicine, our leading medical journal in the United States, Journal of American Medical Association. It came out in January 2013. It was a meta-analysis of 97 studies of 2.9 million people. And that study showed that the optimal survival was in a BMI of 25 to 30. That's a BMI range that's considered in the overweight range. And they had a 6% lower mortality than did the normal BMI, which is between 18.5 and 25. And it was statistically significant. And the mildly obese, which is a BMI, also called class 1 obesity, is a BMI between 30 and 35, they actually had a 5% lower mortality than did the normal weight, although it was not quite statistically significant. Now, when you looked at all the obese combined had a significantly higher mortality than did the normal weight, but that's because there was a considerably higher mortality in the higher degrees of obesity, the class 2 obesity between 35 and 40, and especially the above 40, which is called class 3 obesity, or a lot of times that's defined as morbid obesity. I think that's kind of a mean term. I'd rather, you know, I think that I think calling it class 3 obesity sounds better. But most of the increased mortality is coming from the more severe degrees of obesity, not the overweight and the mild obesity. And clearly, the severe obesity, like a BMI above 40, or what some clinicians and scientists and some patients refer to as morbid obesity, is present in 3% of our population now. In our population in the United States, the current statistics are 74% meet criteria by the BMI for being overweight or obese, and 35% meet the criteria for being obese. So it's a large number of patients, but only 3% right now. But that, unfortunately, that number is growing, or meeting the criteria for class 3 obesity with a BMI of 40. And that degree of obesity is clearly associated with adverse health outcomes. My book, The Obesity Paradox, really does not pertain to the very severe degrees of obesity where clearly weight loss is needed, and whether that weight loss with vigorous diet, non-pharmacologic therapies, even potentially drug therapies, maybe bariatric surgery to reduce obesity. But in the milder degrees of obesity, or even the overweight or the class 1 obesity between 30 and 35, there's actually very little evidence that weight loss improves major health outcomes. And in fact, in those patients, there's a lot more evidence that increasing fitness, or at least avoiding low fitness, is much better for protecting against adverse health outcomes than is weight loss.
Okay, that's a good place to leave it for the moment. We're talking with Dr. Carl Levie, a cardiologist and the author of The Obesity Paradox, about how heavier people may actually be healthier than some thinner people.
And we want to hear from you on this one. What do you think about this idea of the obesity paradox? Is this something you've encountered in your life? And what do you consider healthy? Does this make sense to you that in some cases it can be true that being a little heavier is a little healthier? Share your thoughts at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can send email to talk@WPR.org.
You're listening to Central Time. I'm Gene Purcell.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. We're picking up our conversation now with Dr. Carl Levie, cardiologist and the author of The Obesity Paradox, When Thinner Means Sicker and Heavier Means Healthier.
And we'd like to hear from you, too. So what do you think about this idea of the obesity paradox? Is this something you've encountered in your own life? What do you consider to be healthy weight? And what level does fitness play in all of that? Give us a call. Share your thoughts at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can send us an email, talk@WPR.org. Dr. Levie, right before the break, you mentioned that idea of fitness, and you spend a considerable amount of time on that in your book. And when people think about losing weight, they think about fitness and diet. And of those two, which do you consider to be more important, or are they about the same?
I think actually becoming... And just for example, when you see some thin people, I think very often over the years people have assumed that they're healthier. And the fact is, though, a lot of thin people can have very little muscle mass, can have low physical.
And we are having there he is. I'm sorry, Doctor. Your line has been going in and out.
Oh, sorry.
And so people missed a little bit of that.
Okay.
But you were basically saying that idea that sometimes being thin, they may have low muscle mass, they may have some other health issues that may not be apparent to people who are just looking at them.
That's correct. And actually, very often, they may not be fit. Who's fit has actually a much better prognosis than does a thin person who's has a low level of fitness. So fitness is more important than fatness for predicting long-term good health.
Let's go to the listeners right now. We've got some who would like to join in the discussion, and we begin with Bill, who joins us from Greendale. Hi, Bill.
Hello. Great show. The guest, you're saying that just because I'm overweight doesn't mean I'm more at risk for cardiovascular disease. And I have a question for you. Lately, I've been telling people, because I am thin, I've been telling people just because I'm thin doesn't mean I'm at risk, because it could be, if I'm on a low-fat diet, I'm eating a lot of, typically, if I'm shopping in a regular grocery store, I'm eating a lot of high sugar or high carbohydrate replacements for that fat. And I think that because the sugars turn into fat because it raises the insulin and the fat goes on the liver, as I understand it, that actually I could be more at risk for cardiovascular and a whole line of diseases on that set. So I'm kind of taking it from the diet perspective a little bit,
yeah.
And I agree with what you're saying. It's fascinating stuff.
Bill, thanks for the call, Doctor. Obviously, Bill's been thinking about this quite a bit. Does everybody think about it to the extent that Bill does, or we take a more surface-oriented approach?
Well, I certainly would think the majority of people don't think of that type of detail, but there are a lot of people that have focused a lot of attention about relative perils of sugar and carbohydrate in our society. And in fact, in a lot of ways, the sugar industry has been attacked, and in some situations, it's being attacked almost like the tobacco industry has been attacked. And I think that's right now without merit. I think that some people believe that all of obesity or a great amount of obesity is coming because of too much sugar and too much carbohydrate. My colleagues and I have published some big studies over the last several years that I think point out that the fundamental cause of the progressive obesity that has occurred in our society is the very marked declines that have occurred during the last five decades in physical activity. Now, many of those declines are expected. I mean, you know, 50 years ago, people had to work hard for their food. They had to work hard for many things they did, housework, yard work. Now, people can get by with because of industrialization, with very significant declines in physical activity. So they depend on the leisure time physical activity, which is formal exercise programs. So you have to make yourself exercise, whereas you were naturally exercising many decades ago. But the marked decline in physical activity is really what has caused the weight gain and obesity, not the sugar, the carbohydrate, or the increased calorie load. Now, saying that, in people who are very physically inactive, and right now the stats are only about 20% of our population are meeting the minimal criteria for physical activity. And those people who are physically inactive, they have to cut all calories, including sugar, to make up for the low physical activity. But the answer would be that if they could increase their physical activity a lot, then if one is very physically active, it would be all right to be having some sugar and some carbohydrate, and it wouldn't be so detrimental to your health. So I think the cause of obesity, even though it is multifactorial, I think that the fundamental cause is the very significant decline in physical activity.
Kay is with us now, and Kay joins us from Madison. Hi, Kay.
Hello.
You're on the
air. Hi, Kay.
Hello. Yes. Thank you for answering my call. Yeah, I just have a question about the whole reliance on BMI, because I don't know if this has been addressed earlier or not, but I know myself, I've always had a higher BMI, but I have a very low body fat percentage. I'm just naturally muscular, and when I do tend to work out or whatnot, I gain more muscle mass. And I've noticed that with other fit people, too. They're considered obese or overweight. However, they're not, you know, nowhere near that. And so I'm just wondering if that, you know, kind of, you know, attributes to that equation that you were mentioning before about how people with a little higher BMIs tend to be are not, you know, unhealthy. Maybe it's just because of the whole muscle percentage thing.
Okay, thanks for the call. Yeah. And Doctor, you spend a considerable amount of time talking about BMI in your book.
Yes, and well, first of all, in a big population, typically as the BMI goes up, the body fat, you know, goes up. And so most people who, say, for example, in our society have a 33, a 35 BMI are generally going to have a lot of fat. But very clearly there are exceptions to the rule on both ends. And I'll give a big exception. The middle linebackers in the NFL, many of them would have a BMI, would be classified as obese, and they're solid muscle, you know, and they have hardly any fat on them. And vice versa, you can have some people with normal BMIs who have very little muscle, and they pretty much all fat. And so BMI in individuals is certainly not perfect. And we probably, you know, probably the ideal way to assess, body composition in a research study would be to have scans of what's called DEXA scans. That's not practical in the population. And then so you can do things like waist circumference, waist to hip ratio. You can do some simple body fat determinations. By many of my studies, we just used the sum of the skin fold method, but that really assesses subcutaneous fat, not visceral fat. But very clearly, a lot of times you can look at someone and see that they have a lot more muscle. And so in individuals, two people that have the same exact BMI, one may have a lot of muscle and one may have very little muscle. And so that's why BMI in individuals can be misleading. And certainly in general, when people gain weight, they gain usually a lot of fat unless they do an exercise to make more of the weight gain in muscle. But even when you gain fat, you're going to be gaining usually some muscle. And so a lot of times the heavier people can have more muscle mass than some of the real thin people, particularly the real thin people who are very physically inactive and again, a lot of times can have very low muscle mass. And they can have low levels of fitness. And like I said before, many of those individuals have a much higher risk than do heavier people who have more muscle mass, and especially heavier people who have more muscle mass who are physically fit. They can have a much better prognosis than a thinner person. So you really can't just look at the weight. I think that the weight itself has been tremendously overemphasized in our society, and so you can't just go by what the scale says and determine your health.
Yeah, we've only got less than a minute left, and at the end of your book, you have the 10 principles for readers to take into account about health, and you talk about putting obesity into a personal perspective as principle number one.
Yes, I think I said at the beginning that my book does not promote obesity, and I'm not trying to get people to gain weight, but you can't just say that a person who's got more weight on them or who's not at their ideal body weight is unhealthy, and really you can get a lot more information about health from metabolic health, looking at their sugar, their blood pressure, their lipids, their level of inflammation, their C-reactive protein, and particularly knowing about their fitness. And in research studies, we can measure fitness on the treadmill, but in practice, a lot of times, you don't have a treadmill test. All people in society don't have a treadmill test.
And that's where I'm afraid we'll have to leave it. Thanks for being with us, Dr. Levy.
Okay, Gene. I enjoyed talking with you today.
That was Dr. Carl Levy, cardiologist and the author of The Obesity Paradox, When Thinner Means Sicker and Heavier Means Healthier. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.